If you're tired of bad news, if you need some positivity, if you want to support small businesses, then welcome to Happy, Grateful, Blessed with Kaysville's own mayor, Tammy Tran. Here, you'll get to see the best of humanity from within Utah's hidden gem, Kaysville City. Every month, you'll discover small businesses, hear unique and incredible stories, and understand the difference you make in this wonderful city. If you haven't already, be sure to subscribe to this podcast so that you'll never miss a chance to find a new business to support and learn what makes a city like this one work as well as it does. So join us as we explore Happy, Grateful, Blessed with Tammy Tran.
Hi, everybody. Tammy Tran here with Happy, Grateful, Blessed podcast. I'm here with Rod Arquette. Rod, I am so excited to be with someone famous.
Well, more infamous than probably famous, Tammy,
no,
but it's great to be here, Mayor.
My husband
it's
and I
great
are,
to be here.
We are longtime faithful listeners, and
you know,
you're famous.
This is kind of nice, because now I'm on the other side of the mic, so to speak, because you're asking the questions, which I normally do, and I get to answer them, so this is kind of nice.
I'm really excited and super nervous.
Be nervous.
Anyway, I'm excited to talk to you. Rod, I'm excited to talk to you for a couple of reasons. First, I admire you greatly.
Thank you.
You've had a really long career.
Thank you.
You're very well-spoken. And just the information that you keep in your head, you can talk about anything. and I think that's really neat. And also, you're a Kaysville resident.
Yes.
So
we have been here since about 1983, 1984, and have just, this is our home.
What brought you to Kaysville?
You know, I was working for Channel 2 at the time. And at that time, and Channel 2 asked me to work out of Ogden. To be their, what they used to call their Northern Utah correspondent. And I said, well, and at that time, my wife and I lived way down in West Jordan, like at about 74 South and 3200 West. And I said, well, I'm not making that commute every day.
For sure.
So I've got to build a house. And we looked around and we had a friend of ours who had a piece of property in Hodge Hollow, which is just, I guess it'd be right directly north of the cemetery in that little hollow there. And he says, why don't you go take a look at that property? And so we did one day, but that was 1983. There were sandbags and mud all over the place. Mm-hmm. We went, no, we aren't going to live here. But coming out of that, we came across what was known back then as it was property owned by Lee and Vera Liston. And the Lee Liston, longtime football coach, high school principal here, set up the Kaysville Theater. And she, Vera, his wonderful wife, was just out walking. And we said, are you selling lots in here? And she said, yes, we are. And we found our home. We built a home there and moved into it in late 83, early 84, as I recall. And other than the 4 years we lived in Seattle, whereas I was assigned when I was working for Bonneville to move to Seattle and work out of Seattle, we kept our home here. And this has always been home.
Oh, really?
We love it. We love the small town atmosphere. We love it.
You've lived here longer than I have, and yeah. I thought I've been here a long time. That's really neat.
Yeah, and we just love it. And we just fell in love with the community. We have three sons. They went through Sam Morgan Elementary and Fairfield Junior High, and of course, they're all David Starts.
Absolutely.
So we're Kaysvilleites, and we love Kaysville.
Well, I love that you've lived here such a long time, and I do have a question for you. So you are so politically connected
mm-hmm.
in every
mm-hmm.
way.
Mm-hmm.
Have you ever considered running for office?
I have people ask me that all the time, and I thought about it one time. But I said, it's a lot more fun going after the politicians than being a politician. Sorry, Mayor.
True.
I mean,
no,
it's a
true.
Lot more fun to do so. I love to serve. I've served on panels and I've helped out wherever I can. But political office for me, it'd be fun. I've thought about it. My kids have joked about it all the time. But at this point, I just so much enjoy what I'm doing. And if I did that, I'd have to go off the air.
Oh, okay.
I can't be on the air and run for political office because I would have to offer my opponents equal 3 hours a day. And,
that's true.
You know, so I'd have to step away from my on-air run. Hopefully they'd take me back if I lost, which
right.
I probably would.
Oh,
but I've thought about it, but I enjoy what I'm doing so
well,
much.
Well, I've heard that your family jokes with you that you are the unofficial mayor of Kaysville.
That's what I always
right?
used to kid with them. You're right. They said, Dad, you're the unofficial mayor. Why don't you run for mayor? I said, no, I'm not interested. It's just fun.
Well, I'm curious, since you're so well-spoken and so well aware of everything that goes on, what would you do if you were the mayor of Kaysville?
I just keep doing what you're doing, Mayor. I think it's a great community. I don't think we've got much growth left in this community. I don't think there's too many places to go anymore for the growth of the community. And I just love the traditions of this community through the high school and the parades and everything else that takes place. I don't think I'd change hardly anything at all.
Oh, well, that is
yeah.
really good to
yeah,
know.
I really love it.
since yeah. you've lived here so long.
Yeah, I love it. Yeah.
Are you okay with what you have seen as far as development and growth in the little bit of area that we can grow?
Yeah, sure. I mean, you know, would you like a greater tax base sometimes? You probably would, to give a little more revenue into the city. I don't know where you'd put it. You know, I love the effort that was made to try and bring Trader Joe's.
We're still working on it.
You know, still working on it. I love mm-hmm. that effort. But I think we have everything we need here right now. I don't know what more we would need. You know, sometimes I've heard people say, well, we need a rec center and we need this. And I go, we have rec centers. I mean, what's another rec center going to do? And I always look at the burden on the taxpayer. Mm-hmm. What is the taxpayer going to do, you know? And how are they going to handle it? What will they be asked to do? And I think at this point, I wouldn't change a whole lot. I love this city.
You love the way
yeah,
it is.
Yeah, I love the way it is.
The way it is. Okay, well, that's really good to know, because, you know, there are some obviously conversations about growth.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, Kaysville's been asked, just like every other city, to sort of expand a little bit, open up our eyes to possibilities for, you know, more dense housing and mm-hmm. affordable housing, things like that. And so we've done that as the projects have come a little
mm-hmm.
bit.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, we are what we are.
Yeah.
And I love that. I yeah. love what we are,
yeah.
which is mostly a single family home city.
There's nothing wrong with being a bedroom community.
Right,
and
exactly.
that's what we are. And, you know, we've got everything here we need or is very close by. You know, I think it'd just be up to the city leaders like yourself and the city council, and maybe for taxpayers as well, to decide what's best for the community.
That's
you
true.
You know, there. I think the biggest concern, and I know this is your challenge, infrastructure.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we've got some roads that are pretty banged up, and you have to live with them. You know, if those could get fixed, but other than that, it's fine.
You feel good about it?
Yeah, yeah.
Well, that's really good. I was looking into your history just a little bit, trying to find some things out about you and some good questions that I could ask. And I noticed that you mentioned that your parents grew up. You grew up sort of in a family that were maybe Democrats.
My father. Well. I grew up in way upstate New York.
Okay.
I'm only about, we're, what, 40, 45 miles away from the Canadian border. So
right.
it was
okay.
really far up. But my father was a Democrat, but he's a different Democrat.
Right, exactly.
Yeah,
mentioned
I've said
that.
This before. He wouldn't be a Democrat today. I mean,
right.
my father was a Harry Truman mm-hmm. and John F. Kennedy Democrat.
Right.
Being raised Catholic, Kennedys, we love the Kennedys and all that went on with them. And but my father was a Democrat, but I don't think he'd be so today.
I don't.
Yeah.
I don't
and being a local politician mm-hmm. over time, I mean, I remember once as a kid, I met Hubert Humphrey.
Oh, you did?
Many, many years ago when he was running for president in 68. He came to New York and made a little run for there. And my father, because he was involved in some politics at the time, we had a chance to meet him. And in this job that I have now over the years, I've met so many politicians and, you know,
right.
kind of get to know them fairly well. And it's fun to do. But yeah, I raised in a Democratic family and a large Democratic family. I'm the second of six.
Oh, okay.
So we had a large family.
And obviously, I know your politics don't lean that way for sure.
Yeah, no,
you know,
no.
Totally
not
opposite.
Not anymore.
Right, exactly.
Not anymore.
I was wondering what you think about the change over time as far as the political landscape goes. You know, my parents, I was raised very Republican, very conservative mm-hmm. off in Utah here. And I remember going around the city with my mom handing out, you know, pro-choice sort of literature.
Mm-hmm,
she
mm-hmm.
was very, you know, pro-life.
Huh?
Yes. And I remember that as a kid just really influencing me. And my mom was very much against cable television coming to, you know, to Utah County at the time. And so that's kind of the upbringing that I had. And so we're super conservative.
Yeah.
And I know that you are as well.
Yeah, yeah.
And so as you watch the political landscape now, where there's such a shift in, it feels like we have three parties, honestly.
I would agree.
So what do you think the future looks like as far as that goes? Because I do have the opportunity, it's even though this is a local hometown kind of podcast,
mm-hmm.
I get to talk to some political leaders.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And I know you talk to everybody.
Yeah, we talk to a lot of people. It's divided, but I've said this before, and I'm asked to speak a lot to various mm-hmm. various organizations. And I always say there's always, I think, among the American people, and if the real great American people who love this country, there's this undercurrent of hope. We all have hope that there'll be a better day.
Right.
And that never goes away. I mean, when the founding fathers and they originally came here, they had hope for a country of their own. And that's a common theme that has always run through this country. So yeah, there are times that are divided. I mean, I grew up during the Vietnam era
mm-hmm.
and the violence and the protests that took place there. And I remember people back there saying, you know, I was a teenager back then and my parents were saying, what are we making of this country? We survived, you know, survived. And, you know,
true.
I know people are critical, and I am too, of the January 6th, what took place on that day. That, you know, that to me was a protest that turned into a riot. But you know what? The system worked. the checks and balances worked.
True.
And we had a president, you know, there were some who didn't like the idea, but the system worked. So I think the system will always work. Are we divided now? Yeah, we're divided, but we have that one thing. This is America. What concerns me, and I'm probably talking way too long,
are the
student protests, because I think the student protests are more than just protest against Israel. I think you have, there's a network within this country who wants death to America. Mm-hmm. They hate America. They use the George Floyd death as a way for them to express it. Now they're using the conflict in the Mideast to say, we hate Israel, but really, we hate America. We hate what America stands for. That's what's dangerous, in my opinion.
It is, and I agree. And it's these factions, these extreme groups mm-hmm. that get in and they pretend like they're part of good cause,
yeah.
you know,
and
something that's valid. And they're not at all.
No.
And it's sad to me that we allow it to happen.
Mm-hmm.
And as young students, of course, you know, you just get involved and it's a college campus and they want to fight for something. And I understand that. But how do we fix it? It's frustrating to me to watch. And
well, to be honest, I think in many ways the American people are to blame for it as far as fixing it, because conservatives over the years have always been concerned about what's coming out of our colleges and universities. Mm-hmm. But we never really investigated what's going on. Now we're seeing what has been going on. And I think there are many leftists within the higher education system that have taught students, and they've heard, you know, nothing else, to be afraid of climate change, you know, to be afraid of this, that they hate America. America is wrong because we're the oppressor and they're the oppressed. And I think that's the real concern that we have. And I think they've been exposed. Now it's going to be interesting to see what is done about it. And I'm not sure what will be done.
What can we do locally? I mean, you know, we talk about trying to fix things.
Yeah.
From a state, you know, from the federal government level. And then we think, okay, there's nothing we can do. Then we go to the state and we think, well, we get along mostly in Utah. But locally, that's kind of where the rubber meets the road. So.
Yeah, it is. And I've always said, Tammy, that, you know, you can please participate and be active.
Mm-hmm.
I say all the time, I think the two most important elections that take place within a community every year are the election for city council and mayor and the election for school board, because more than anything, they have direct impact on your lives.
Right.
So get involved in those elections, get involved, know who's running, understand the candidates, what they stand for, because I think those are the most important things to do. My message is to people, quit your complaining.
Right.
Quit your bitching, pardon my French. Get out there and get involved. Find out where they stand and help fix it.
The thing that drives me crazy is people that are sitting on their couch or sitting behind a keyboard just popping off. You know, popping off all their ideas. They're, you know, this is bad, this is bad. And this is what frustrates me so much with politics and even the election happening right now. I, as a voter, don't want to hear why you hate the other person.
Yeah.
I don't.
Yeah.
What I want to hear is, what are you going to do to make a difference? And that's, we're not willing to say that sometimes.
Yeah.
I really admire the fact that you said, you know, as a talk show host, you have to be authentic. You put yourself out there, you share your opinions.
Mm-hmm.
And I think as politicians, sometimes we're really nervous about mm-hmm. saying what we think. People tell me, in fact, don't endorse. You're a mayor, you don't have to endorse.
Mm-hmm.
I think I've got a megaphone.
Yeah.
Why wouldn't I try to use it to support people and things that I believe in? And so it's really frustrating to me. So you said, don't bitch and complain. I get it. And
yeah.
I 100% agree. We need to be proactive.
Yeah. Just sit down and call you. Pick up the phone.
Mm-hmm.
Call, say, hey, I'd like to talk to the mayor about this. You know, have a conversation with them. I mentioned this. I did a segment on my show. There was a New York Times survey, and it asked people if they were offended by Donald Trump or if he has said offensive things in the past. 70% said yes, but that's past now. They've moved on that because, you know, I think you have to look at the policy first and then the politician. Look at the policies that they're pushing for. The politician, you know, they aren't perfect. None of us are perfect, and deal with it. And I think if nothing else, what we're starting to learn, I hope we are, is that we're willing to say what's on our minds. Now, you can say them in a nice way, or you can be a jerk and sometimes say them in the wrong way, but don't be afraid to speak up. Too many Americans are too shy. You know, they don't want to ruffle the feathers. It's time to ruffle feathers, I think, and shoot straight with people. They won't, if they are offended by the fact that you're shooting straight, that's their problem, not your problem.
I really love that you said that, because it's 100% true. I would much rather have someone tell me to my face how they feel.
Yeah.
Rather than stab me in the back or hear it from someone else.
Yeah.
You know, especially when you straight up ask the question.
Yeah.
Just be honest.
You know,
we're just so afraid.
What I find interesting here as well is that, you know, in this state, because of the influence of the dominant religion over the years, you know, people are instructed, be nice. You know, don't say mean things. Well, by being direct and pointing out what you believe in, I don't think it's being mean. It's what you honestly believe. And especially on politics, you know, a lot of people, I think people have to understand politics in many ways, more not so much, well, maybe locally as well, can be a blood sport. It's adversarial. You've got your point versus their point. And you've got to be able to understand that. If you go in understanding that, really not personal, you know, now Donald Trump allowed it to be personal at times, mm-hmm. but I think he did that to get attention. But, you know, state what you believe in and stand for what you believe in and have a thick skin because people are going to criticize you.
It's true.
And you have but to it right. happens.
You're right. It's true. And you did mention Trump. And so huge Trump fans on policy.
Yeah.
You know, absolutely. He was great for businesses. He was great for economy. He was great for our country.
Mm-hmm.
You didn't mess around. You knew exactly where he stands on things. And my husband's a huge Trumper. And has always been, and he keeps telling me, I told you, you know, he was going to win. And anyway, and I am too. I don't always agree with his, the way he executes.
Oh, sure.
For sure.
Yeah.
Maybe I don't have the same style, but.
But he just cracks me because he, in a way, people don't realize this, is that prior to Trump being elected president, generally the major legacy media like the New York Times and Washington Post would kind of control the flow of the news every day with what they printed in their newspapers every morning. Donald Trump took that over with his tweets.
Exactly.
So everyone would see, what is he saying today? And then the rest of the day, they'd be talking about that. So he controlled the message for 4 years, and it drove the legacy media nuts. And he still controls it today. I mean, look how much attention is being paid to this hush money trial. I mean, a stupid trial. The Stormy Daniels stuff had absolutely nothing to do whatever crime he is accused of committing, but he's still controlling the media, which just cracks me up. Hey, I've never seen a politician like that.
Well, and that's what makes him so unique and special, right?
Yeah, it does. Yeah, it sure does.
And one of the other things that I loved about him is he opened up the White House to us.
Mm-hmm.
He would tweet, and here's a picture of me doing something in a meeting with people. And I love that because, you know, you wonder, what do they do all day?
Yeah.
And how effective are they being? And the fact that he was able to just take that. Do you think that was his own brilliant strategy, narcissist sort of personality, or was it, did he have good people?
Well, I think he has good people, but I also think he's very media savvy. I mean, he learned a lot through the Apprentice show that he did.
I mean,
he's always, he really understands the media, I think, and how it works. I mean, a classic example was, you know, here's Joe Biden raising $25 million with Barack Obama and Bill Clinton at that big event in New York City. And what's Donald Trump doing? Going to the wake of the fallen police officer. You know, Donald Trump shows up in a Chick-fil-A and buys everybody Chick-fil-A's and milkshakes, right? Joe Biden tries to do the same sort of retail politics, and five people show up. I mean, he has the sense. I mean, he's on trial. He takes pizzas to the fire department, for crying out loud. I mean, he knows retail politics. I think that's why people like him. He, you know, Joe Biden, because of his age, and I'm not critical of his age because we all age, some age faster than others, but Joe Biden can't do that because they're so afraid he's going to mess up or stumble. There's a great story. He did an interview with Aaron Burnett on CNN the other day. And there's a story out today. In 17 minutes, he told 15 lies.
Really? Because he just
almost a lie a minute, you know? Oh. And he's talking about every point that he made. That's not true, Joe. You're wrong there, Joe. And hopefully the American people see through that. And, you know, it's just going to be a fascinating election. We've got less than 6 months to go. We'll have to see what happens.
We're getting so close. What do you think about Utah elections that are happening right now? As far as you, I know you've spoken to everybody and you know everybody personally.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. You know, it's a fascinating year. I mean, there are some the race to replace Mitt Romney
mm-hmm.
with four really qualified candidates, I think. Brad Wilson, who's a Kaysvilleite, John Curtis, who I know well, the other candidates as well. I mean, it's going to be very, very interesting. That's an interesting race. I think the second and third district races. Now, Blake Moore has a competitor here, which surprised me in the first district. I think he'll be fine, but I think the message is being sent to politicians as a result of the convention, and people are very critical of it. I absolutely mm-hmm. like it. I think there's some things we could do differently, but it wakes the politicians up. You better pay attention. So I think the Senate race is going to be interesting. I think the race for Attorney General is mm-hmm. going to be very, very interesting. in the 3rd and 2nd districts. I mean, Celeste Malloy won an election 5 months ago. Now she's having to run again.
She's fighting hard.
And Colby Jenkins is really a solid candidate down there. And that 3rd district, you've got so many candidates involved in there. I really like Mike Kennedy. I think Mike Kennedy's a good guy. And he's very sharp, but there, you know, the beauty of it is, in my opinion, Tammy, we have good candidates.
We do. It's true. We've got some really great choices.
We've got some really great choices, and there are tough choices, and people are going to have to decide for themselves who will best represent their views.
You know, I know that you're at the state convention. Mm-hmm. I was at the state convention also. I was working the green room mostly kind of with the candidates. But it was interesting. It's been interesting as I've seen tweets released and news reports released and people interviewed. Because I was there, yes, I definitely saw the disrespect, but I also saw a lot of really great things that happened. So, you know, the fact that people were willing to stay there all day, that really believe in that system. So I was, curious about how you feel. You mentioned that there maybe needs some, we need some fixes, right?
You know, I think more than anything, it was organizational challenges that they had. You know, some people have suggested maybe split up the 4 congressional races. Have people go to different rooms instead of sitting through all of them, and you come back together for the statewide races. I think the registration was messed up. Having it in the same area where the candidates are there,
that
could have been sped up. I know Rob Axon well. I've talked to Rob. You know, trying to use modern technology, I think it's good and bad. There are some good things about there. He needs to understand many of those delegates are my age.
right.
Some people are intimidated by that technique. You know, using your phone, I can't find it.
We were
right near the green room at the time. And every vote, you'd have a long line of people coming over the help desk.
Exactly.
So you need to make the technology, if you're going to do it, which I'm fine with, make it as simple as you possibly can. I think they tried, but maybe there's some steps that they could take. The criticism directed, I think, should be directed more the organization and the setup than what the convention system and the caucus system is all about, because I love it.
You love the grassroots effort.
I love the grassroots.
I've
been a state delegate a couple of times, been a county delegate, I think, once. I mean, you really do get involved. It drives my wife nuts because we get all these flyers, all these direct mail pieces, and these phone calls.
Right,
my wife's
you
like, there's another call, you know. But she understands that's the name of the game.
It is, and I mean, they have to get their word out there, but I did, so I wasn't a state delegate this time, I was just a volunteer, I'm a county delegate, but people said multiple flyers and brochures and just everything. People spent a lot of money.
They do.
And they're still spending a lot of money, which is kind of crazy. And, you know, the path to the signature gathering process is so expensive.
It is.
So there's just a barrier to entry for most people.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, you know,
I've heard a couple of suggestions. If you have candidates who've already qualified for the ballot through the position process, maybe they don't address the convention because they're already there.
I have heard that.
That has been one suggestion. I'm sixes on it, to be real honest, because I think they should be given a chance to address the delegates, you know, but when you have what they have in some of the races, 9 and 11 candidates, it takes a little while.
It did. And it's really hard with the voting system because, you know, we said, well, just keep going with the speeches. But the problem was then you go to round 2 and then you go to round 3 and you have to bring them back up. And so it's just organizationally, it's kind of hard to not let them speak, vote, and then just have a result.
Yeah.
And just sitting there on waiting forever was kind of hard.
I was there probably not as long as you were, but I was there. I got there a little bit before noon and I only stayed till 6, but I know it went well. Yeah, it's unfair to ask delegates to stay at a 17-hour convention or whatever it was. They've got to fix that.
It is. Well, and it's hard when the Senate, I mean, all the races are important, but, you know, the Senate race was the last race, and it was at the very late hours in the night.
That's a very important race.
Exactly.
I think about 1,000 delegates left before the vote was taken.
I think they did, too.
You don't want that. So I hope the party itself, the Republican Party, is kind of doing an autopsy, looking at, okay, what can we improve and make those changes, because the media in this town does not like the caucus convention system, and I do, and they're going to be critical of it until we make it right.
That's true, and it will never be perfect.
Yeah.
I think people need, you know, they're very well aware of that. So I'm going to ask you, since you've interviewed so many people, and you're such a long-time, you know, experienced professional, what advice do you have for talk show people, like podcasters like me, someone who's just trying to have some fun with podcasting and interviewing? Give me some good advice.
Well, be real.
Okay.
And you're being real. Like I said, be authentic, you know, and, you know, I've heard two people, I think it was Larry King and Rush Limbaugh, who rarely, if they were interviewing a book author or doing something on an article they've written, they rarely read it beforehand.
Oh, really?
They just want to be inquisitive and ask questions. And the good interviewers listen, because they pick up on a word like you may, and I'll pick up on a word someone said, and I'll use that to ask my next question. So it's really two-way communication. Ask a good question, but also listen to the answer. Too many times they have all these questions, and that the interviewee may have said some really interesting stuff, but they missed it because they were so concentrating on the questions.
On what's next.
And not concentrating on the answers. So well, listen to the answers.
That's really good advice. Okay.
Yeah, because, there'll be times where I've done an interview and I said, oh, I missed that one. You just know sometimes, oh, I missed, there's a question there I should ask.
Yeah, I have listened to the podcast after the fact and thought about that because you're so far ahead in your head. In fact, I have some notes on my iPad and I did close it because I thought, you know what, I don't care about what I wrote. I really want to be able to just be in tune to the conversation, but I wanted to be prepared for it so I can understand that. So that's really good advice. Listen to the answers, be part of the conversation.
Yeah, because the answers oftentimes will give you your second question.
That's true.
It really will.
And then
will.
It leads into something more interesting than what you'd maybe
you'll be
come
able
up
to
with.
Dig a little bit deeper.
Yeah, that's true. Give me some advice for politicians. Now, I don't consider myself a politician. Mm-hmm. I realize I'm in politics, but I'm a local nonpartisan mayor. But you've talked to a lot of political people. So do you have advice as far as things that you've seen people do that were very wrong, that just, you know, they had a great career going and oops, they just blew it?
Well, Christy Noem comes to mind right away.
Don't write a book about
shooting your dog. Yeah. I mean, that's not, and then go on a tour and defending it. That doesn't make a whole lot of sense to me. I go back. I don't think it's any different, Tammy, than what I think everybody should be real. Don't promise things. I'm hearing, we're all hearing a lot of ads right now for the various campaigns. I want to cut the deficit, reduce. Those are all talking points.
Right.
Just be honest with people and say, I'm going to work to do what I can to hold government spending down. Instead, I'm going to cut the deficit or I'm going to do this. You know, those are talking points. And hopefully listeners get past the talking points and ask the real questions. You know, I would love a politician to say, it'd crack me up one time if it came out and just said, you know, I'm running for office because I think I can hopefully get something done. I may not get anything done, but I'm going to try. And here's what I believe in. And tell them what you believe from your heart, you know, from what you really believe. And then say, that's what I believe in. And I'm going to fight for those values. I think I share the same values that you do. And that's what I'm going to fight every day. And don't give me this, I'll seal the border and stop this and stuff. Because you're one congressman or you're one senator. Good luck.
Right. You're right. You're one little vote.
You're one vote.
Well, and earlier you mentioned it's the hope. You want Americans to continue to hope.
Yeah.
And so voting for somebody who would be willing to say that, you know, I hope to accomplish something. And this is what I really want to do. Mm-hmm. It'll take a team. It'll take a tribe. It'll take all of us working together.
It'll take you.
Exactly.
You, the voter, working with me, telling you what, you know, this is a team effort. I represent you, but you're part of the team.
And we can't do it by ourselves.
No,
that's the biggest thing that bugs me about President Trump.
Thinks he can.
He and it's great because you do, you know, I think, okay, so my husband will say, he's a strong leader. He said, Lee, he can't do it by himself.
Yeah, he can't.
And that's the only thing that really rubs me the wrong way.
Yeah.
Is it, I did this and I did this. And I'm thinking, no, you didn't.
Yeah.
You had a great idea with a team of other people with great ideas and you got people on board and it's wonderful.
Yeah.
But we can't do it by ourselves.
No, it is a team effort.
So we
all have pull. And more than anything, you've got to believe in America. If you don't believe in this country, then don't represent it, and don't try and represent people in it.
Well, and so that you bring up something that's interesting. So my husband, love him. He's 100% believes that the election was stolen, and I said, Lee, I understand that because I get it logically. At the same time, if we don't believe in our system, and we don't believe that it works, we don't have a system. We don't have protections. We don't have democracy. We don't have a republic representative sort of government if we don't believe in it. So what do you think about that?
Well, I think that word stolen, you know, bothers. When I think of stolen, to me, it means there was an organized effort to steal the election. I think what had happened was that so many changes were made in the voting rules by governors without legislative approval, which constitutionally they should have had.
Okay.
Those changes created opportunities for people to do things they shouldn't. Were there some shenanigans going on? Yeah, I believe there were. Is stolen the right word? I'm not sure if stolen is the right word, but that, I think for some people, for former President Trump, that's the best way to frame it. Mm-hmm. I just believe there were some for lack of a better term, shenanigans going on.
Some people
were doing something, and these governors got away with things that they shouldn't have gotten away with in changing voting laws. My hope is the Republicans this time have gone back and made sure that doesn't happen again. I'm not convinced of that, but I hope they have. I mean, there's some rules, changes that could be made that would restore confidence. But there was, I noticed just the other day, there was a conference put on by the Sutherland Institute, and their effort, they've got a group now working nationally to restoring conservatives' confidence in elections. That's a tall task.
Mm-hmm.
But if you show them what is being done and what has been done, you know, and there are some very simple, I mean, I think voter rolls should be updated every 2 or 4 years. They need to be. A classic example, our youngest son and his wife lived with us for a couple of years. When they moved out, we kept on getting their ballots. We could have cheated very, very easily, you know, and that's what, those are the type of things, the simple things that could be done.
That could be caught.
Yeah. And I'm not a, I don't mind voting by mail, but I think it should be a much tighter window. I mean, voting a month out.
It's
no.
True. That's a long time to sit there.
Maybe a week max, you know, but I still believe, Tana, I just love going and voting.
It is fun. It's fun to see your neighbors
by mail,
there.
Just to go in and feel like this is what it's all about, folks. And I wish we'd get back to that. I wouldn't be opposed sometime to making it putting it on a Sunday and making it a national holiday.
Oh, I love that idea.
To vote on a Sunday. A lot of European countries do that.
Really?
Why not just do
that.
It on a Sunday? Now, the concern would be that a lot of Americans want their weekends off and they wouldn't do it. But, you know.
Easier, though, than after work.
It may be
easier.
It may be easier. I'm not a big fan of where Utah has its primary right now, a primary on June 25th, mm-hmm. In the middle of the summer, folks. I don't want to even think politics.
Do you think September is better?
I think September is better. It gives 60 days out. You know, 60. You're running anyways in the primary. You win. Now you just continue your campaign for another 60 days. So I'd be in favor, and I think the legislature changed that or somebody.
I was going to say, why did that change?
Yeah, I'm not sure why it changed. I think it was a legislative move. It may have been the party because they wanted to. There's so many
big events and
deadlines and dates they have to be, but I would be much more in favor of like the first Tuesday in September.
I would too. I remember it being that way. But I also remember going to the school and voting and your neighborhood's all there. And it's really fun. It's just a sort of, I don't know, it's a cool patriotic experience.
Yeah, I remember going as a young kid going with my parents and voting.
I do too.
I mean, they voted in the Kennedy election and, you know, in all these elections. I remember going with my parents, young kid, and have no idea what they were doing, but they just kind of enjoyed it.
And it was a priority to
them. Yeah, it sure was. More so than I think now, which is sad.
It is sad. And I think especially it's kind of sad in Utah. I tried to get my neighbors to go to caucus. Come on, you guys, we need your vote. This is to get involved. You need to be delegates. And great neighbors, great neighborhood, but they kind of just feel like, it'll work out. You know, we know who we're going to elect.
Yeah.
And at the end of the day, it really doesn't matter. And that's what's sad.
It does matter. Yeah, it really does.
It really matters.
When people say that, I go, oh, yes, it does.
Oh, I've been in those ballot counting rooms
at
convention. And, you know, it matters. 2 or 3 votes makes a difference, mm-hmm. whether or not you're on the ballot or, you know, not.
Yeah, there were a couple close races this year. 10 delegates.
Yes.
May have made the difference.
It's a very big deal.
Yeah.
And hopefully people show up when they are delegates. But I love the fact that we have an opportunity to get involved. Now, you mentioned the, you know, mail-in ballots and as far as elections and mm-hmm. the Sutherland Institute's most recent article. I think they said something in there about how as a state, it's disingenuous for me to say, you know what, in Utah, elections are safe and secure
mm-hmm.
and not spread that message that it's probably like that in most other states as well. But I do believe that specifically here in Utah,
yeah, I
we've
think
got a great system.
You know, you can always tweak. You can always look at things, what you can do a little bit better. And people are going to complain about the what they call it, the ERIC system that I think they use. There'll be complaints about that. But I think for the most part, I feel pretty good about here in the state of Utah.
I do too. As far as moving forward in politics, and the only thing that is frustrating to me is just like I mentioned, the negative campaigning.
Yeah.
I realize it gets attention. You know, I was even thinking about my podcast titles. Maybe I should make them a little more interesting, you know, because people look for that.
Yeah.
As I'm scrolling through YouTube, it's, the world's going to collapse. I mean, that's what we're drawn to.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, the economy's going to crash. Of course, I'm going to look at that, even though really the video doesn't have a lot to do with that. So how do you balance that in politics and the messaging?
With the messaging?
Uh-huh.
Any politician who doesn't have a thick skin shouldn't be a politician.
Okay.
And I tell that my wife, because she'll read some of the emails I get. She goes, how do you put up with that? And I said, you don't have a thick skin, you know, mm-hmm. don't get in the business. So have a thick skin. and you are going to get negative campaign. You are going to get negative ads, and you can either respond to them or ignore them. And it depends on how negative or, you know, a personal attack to me is way out of base. If you're attacking me on policy or what I'm presenting, I'm fine with that. Don't attack me personally or my family.
That's true. There's definitely, you know, a line
that,
there.
That when you cross that line, then I think you've made a mistake as a politician.
In Utah, does negative negative campaigning work?
Well, they say it doesn't, but it does.
Yeah,
I mean, everyone says, oh, I hate that campaign. But it works,
doesn't it?
I mean, every politician out there, their ads now of in the Senate race here in Utah, already attacks going against each other. Those will pick up. Everyone says, oh, we hate him, we don't like him. But folks, they work. And the research shows they work. They do cause damage to candidates if they aren't ready. But what the really smart politicians, I think, will, before they really launch into their campaign, they will do an autopsy on themselves or have their staff, their campaign staff, and sit down and say, okay, let's lay it all out. What are we going to be attacked on? And then be ready when that attack comes. Instead of you're proactively responding, or you go out there and say, yes, I've done certain things. An example would be Derek Brown in the Attorney General's race. He did work with Facebook. He did, you know, do some of that social media stuff. But he was in the forefront, said, yeah, I worked with this.
Okay.
Instead of allowing it to be attacked, he responded first. He said, yeah, I've worked with this. So how do they attack him if he's already admitted?
Oh, okay.
See what I'm saying?
Right.
So
that's smart.
As a candidate, sit down and say, okay, what in my personal life could they attack? Hopefully they won't. But policy-wise, what have I done that they could attack?
And then get in front of that.
And then get in front of it or be ready for it.
Oh, that's really smart. Okay, because sometimes I know we want to shy away from things.
Oh, you want to shy away?
You know, seem negative at all.
You're putting yourself out there. You
got to
put all of yourself out there, I think.
That's
my
true.
My opinion.
That's true. As far as the future, what do you think about Utah? You know,
this is a great state.
I mean, we are, yeah, everything seems good.
I mean, 2 years in a row running, we've been selected as the best state. Mm-hmm. There's momentum here. I think our biggest challenge is handling growth and managing it in a way. I mean, housing affordability is a huge, huge issue right now. I mean, you know, the house we bought, I mean, the price of the house and buying a home that we live in now, the price would be astronomical.
It would be.
And I don't know how you afford or how you solve the affordable housing issue. Because one of my sons, we were talking about it the other day, and says, people are going to ask for an outstanding or an amazing price, a ridiculous price. But they'll probably get it.
They will.
You know, and if people ask for a nutty price and they get it, who's going to stop me? Hey,
exactly.
So-and-so down the road sold there for this. We're going to ask this and see if we get it. And they get it.
And they do.
So I don't know how you solve the problem. More houses. I mean, we can only shoehorn more people into this 5-county area.
Right.
Sooner or later, we're going to have to say, that's it.
Well, it's true.
And we don't want to say that. That would be bad. But how do you, I'm not sure.
I don't know either. I mean, the legislature came up with this big plan. I can't remember which bill it was, that they're going to sort of discount some rates for lending for developers. And, mm-hmm. you know, I was in those meetings and thought, okay, that's great. But what about the home buyers? Let's discount some rates for these kids, our kids, who are trying to afford a home, be able to help them where they're at. But I think
Stuart Adams, the Senate president, came up with a plan where I think there's a program now for first-time home buyers where you can get, what, $20,000, something like that. And I think we may need to do something like that. But $20,000 on some of these homes isn't enough.
Well, and it's hard to qualify.
It's just that missing middle,
you know?
Yeah.
The kids that can qualify for that plan can barely afford the house and really shouldn't be in the house that they can actually qualify for.
Yeah.
And then that middle, you know, these working professionals that make just over $100,000, which seems like a lot of money. But it's not.
Yeah.
It's not anymore.
Not anymore.
House payments are $4,000.
Yeah. So I think for Utah, that's the biggest challenge. I think managing that growth, the water issue is, you know, you've got to make sure we've got water. You can't grow without some water.
True.
I think some transportation issues. But, you know, I laugh when people talk about, oh, transportation is bad. And I've just been to L.A. and been driving in L.A. And I go, really? It's not that bad. And I laugh because when I worked for years at KSL, you know, we came up with the idea of traffic and weather together every 10 minutes on the nines. And I kind of said, well, there's really not that bad of traffic. But we did it. We repeat it. Now people believe we have the worst traffic in the world.
Especially between Kingsville and...
No, we don't. I mean, of course, I go in a lot later, but I've gone into work at 8 o'clock in the morning. I think the bigger issue is the South End coming in from Utah County and that area, which is just ballooned as far as population is concerned. That's problem. But I think state leaders are trying to address those problems. You know, they know growth, they know water, they know development, they know the affordable housing is an issue. And that's why, you know, I think, Tammy, oftentimes the state legislature gets a bad rap, but I think they're doing as best they can. And we've been recognized for doing a very good job. So
it's true. I agree with you. I think that they're doing such a good job.
Yeah.
You know, overall. Yeah, we might get a ping here and there. But...
Yeah. Yeah. And they realize. So I think the future of Utah is bright. I mean, you know, we aren't going anywhere. We love it here. And I don't think my kids want to go anywhere. They love it here.
Same. Yeah, and it's the family.
You know, and what they're doing, you know, the NHL coming here, they're trying to create places. And I mean, we have 5 national parks, we have beautiful mountains, you know.
Rod, I don't know anyone that knows Utah better than you do.
Oh, there are a lot of people.
I mean,
I know it better than I do.
The history and the landscape and politically and just with everything else, you know, I would love to see you write. I mean, your career is not over by any means. Of course, you're still in the thick of it. But someday, would you ever consider writing a book about your interviews and just the things that you've seen and just...
I thought about it.
I think it would be really neat.
I don't know if I could do it. I admire people who do. I mean, I'm good friends with Congressman Chris Stewart, former Congress, and Chris cranks out books all the time. I go, how do you do that? Because I'm not smart enough to
Oh, you are, and just fascinating. I mean, you know everybody. You know where the bodies are buried. You know.
It's kind of interesting to find out sometimes.
Yes, yeah. And just all of the things that you've contributed. One of the things that I thought was very cool in reading about you was that it was partly your idea, or maybe all your idea, to put KSL on the FM.
Yeah, that's an interesting story.
I remember. Tell us about it.
When I was with Bonneville had purchased a station in Washington, D.C. at the time, WTOP, which is a powerful all-news station. But they were located on the far end of the AM dial. It's like, you know, 1500, which is horrible. You know, mm-hmm. If you don't be on the AM dial, be on the lower end instead of the higher end. But I was talking with Jim Farley because Jim Farley was my counterpart there at WTOP. And he said, we got to get this moved to FM, you know. And I remember this is the craziest story in the world, Tammy. I was taking a shower one morning.
Oh, okay.
This is where my ideas hit,
awesome.
You know, and it just hit me. We had at Bonneville, we had repurchased FM 100 and Rock 103.5 and 102.7. 102.7 wasn't doing anything. I mean, they were trying to find their niche, their music, their personalities. It wasn't going anywhere. And I remember, a manager's meeting. One, it was that morning, and after the managers, most had left, my boss, the general manager, a woman by the name of Chris Redgrave at the time, said, Chris, you got a minute? She said, yeah. And I said, what if we put KSL on FM? And she, we can't do that.
I said,
why not? Yeah. You know, why not? I mean, our station in Washington is thinking about it. Why don't we think about it as well? She goes, well, don't say anything to anybody. And I said, I won't. I just threw this idea. Well, later that afternoon, she calls me up and she says, did you tell Bruce Reese that? Bruce Reese was the CEO of Bonneville International at the time. And I said, no. And I said, why? Because he called me today and suggested it as well.
Oh, really?
So it was kind of like this meeting of the minds. And it took me a few days to convince people that's the direction to go.
So cool.
Because the challenge was AM stations do not get into office buildings.
Oh, I didn't know that. Okay.
It was a signal issue more than anything. We couldn't get into the big office buildings downtown. The AM just doesn't get through. You know, FM was a better delivery mode to get the signal in there. And we finally decided to do it. It was a tough decision for Chris, because the staff on the music station 102.7 had to be let go. That's never easy to do, but it was the right decision. And I remember the day we did it. It was a BYU football game. I said, okay, let's just hold off. Let's get all the ducks lined up. And the first BYU home game, we'll do it. And we'll make the change. So we made the change. And Greg Rubel, who I hired when he was just a kid out of, you know, school, a really bright kid, was eloquent in how he presented this. It's a new age for KSL. You know, we begin our broadcast on FM and AM. And I'm driving home listening to that game on FM. I'm going, this has never sounded better.
Oh, that's incredible.
It really does sound great. And not the CEO, but the COO of Bonneville International, a man by the name of Bob Johnson, called me on my way home. He said, I've never heard a football game sound so good.
Oh, that's so neat.
So it just all these minds came together and said, let's do it. And I think we're the first or second one in the country that did this. And now almost all of them have done it. They needed to do it.
It's absolutely outstanding.
It's a crapshoot, but we tried it. Well, you know, I love people just try different things. You know, that's what I love. You're going to win, you're going to lose, but you tried.
And you make a difference.
You tried, yeah. You try and make a difference.
It's really you've done so many really, really interesting things
we've
in your career.
We've had some fun.
Gosh, you've been such a mover and a shaker, and you still are. You continue to be. I really appreciate you spending some time with me.
Well, it's been. I think I've talked too much, so I'll just shut up.
You know, you haven't at all. I just have to thank you. So when I was running for city council, I think, I found out that on your radio show, you allow people to call in for, is it 30 seconds
or something?
Yeah,
we call it a minute to win it.
A minute to win it,
and
yes.
And we'll do that again, because I think it's fun, you know. A lot of, like, city council races, they haven't got the money to spend
right,
on broadcasting.
Sure.
But give them a minute. See if they can do it in a minute. That's
exactly.
Always fun, because when they hit a minute, we give them the big buzzer. But it does make it fun.
Well, it was so much fun, and it was so scary. So that was the first time I've ever called into a radio, and it was live, and I was so nervous. And then I did it again for my mayor's race. Anyway, thank you for letting me have that opportunity.
Oh, it's fun to do, and this is what radio should be sometimes. I mean, we are a business. People need to understand we're a business. We have to make money first. But we also have a commitment to the community, and this is an easy way to do it.
Well, you've been such a great advocate for Kaysville and for the state and for everyone, so I appreciate all the time that you've given us
welcome.
On air. So thank you.
You're welcome.
To all my podcast listeners, thank you for listening. I really appreciate your feedback and your support. Please leave comments, and please leave suggestions for future guests. And most importantly, subscribe. Thank you.